We are getting better at it. Okay. Well, I'm Diane DeUlis. I'm the Deputy Director for Policy at ASPR. I work for Dr. Lurie, and I realize that I'm the only thing standing between everyone and lunch, and also that my illustrious colleagues have covered a lot of material that I don't need to repeat here, so I'll try and be keep my comments brief and quick, and then hopefully there'll be some time for questions. So I did want to just take, 10 seconds to thank Dr. Lurie for her sort of idea and putting in support in putting the Science Preparedness Initiative together. When I first came to ASPR, I was working in policy, and prior to that, I had been a scientist at the NIH and a program manager at the NIH. So I would have been one of those people who, when they looked at the incident command that Chip showed, said, WTF, what is this? So I've been thrilled to be part of this initiative, and we have a great team. I've been really excited about what science can do in this field. So the questions that we started with in putting this together and just kind of bringing it up to some summary as we close out this session: how do we identify scientific priorities during crises? Key question for us. And what's different about doing science during a crisis than normally doing science? If you're somebody in the lab who does science, you don't think about doing science in a different way that a crisis might cause you to have to do. What data should be collected? What areas of research could we focus on? I've listed some here. Again, you've already heard this in some of the presentations that we already talked about. In the past 2 years, this is kind of a laundry list of the areas that we focused on in building the infrastructure for science preparedness and response across the federal government. And I'm going to talk, you've already heard about some of these. I'm going to talk about a couple of them in particular. We have a federal interagency team. It's across HHS, but is expanding rapidly to include some other agencies and departments of the federal government, particularly through the Ebola experience. I think we've seen that. And this is supposed to facilitate communication and information sharing. It's a great forum for us to just talk, share ideas, talk about the programs we're doing. But at the same time, it serves as a ready group of people for when a disaster happens so that we can have our organizations together and understand what we're doing and collaboratively. And I would also add that not every disaster is a flash disaster. Some of these I call them sort of slow rolling scenarios. So for example, we did a lot during the drought to try and understand what kind of science issues were there, what kind of human studies issues were needed during the drought, and it kind of was slowly rolling across the summer, but it was very important to gather our thoughts there and set some goals. Underneath the spirit group, we have a couple of working groups. I think Aubrey or others have already mentioned the Ebola working group that we've been working across federal government. We just had the IOM meeting and the report that came out. And we also have the research responder working group, and you've heard particularly from Chip and Aubrey what a lot of inroads they're making in there in defining who is the research responder, how do we want to reach out to them, how can we standardize the way we think research responders should work and integrate them. And we also have a FERB working group. This is the IRB that Dr. Lurie talked about in her introductory remarks. And this is really being led by the Office of the Director at the NIH. And as you may know, many of the different institutes at the NIH have their own centralized IRB. NIEHS has one, which is sort of a hallmark. This one and maybe the NIAID IRBs are sort of offered up as flagships of this FERB. But the idea is that in any disaster, the NIH could call on a set of expertise from individual institutes across the NIH or a single institute IRB that could stand up and function as the FERB. And I would direct you, there's a lot of information on the slide, I would direct you to that website that has all of this. And what the FERB will do is it will function as the IRB of record. The things that the FERB can do will be a centralized IRB, so if there are multiple sites, across the study, they can receive a single review. This will function in any other way that any other IRB will. I think Dr. Lurie mentioned earlier in her comments that, you know, a FIRB may not be necessary as long as an institution can do this work and rapidly turn around a protocol quickly. A FIRB is not required, but certainly it stands as the example of what we're going for. And this is what the NIH pointed out, again, is that everything that would happen at an institution normally for a clinical study would happen, and the difference being that the FIRB would be used in place of the institutional IRB as needed or if necessary. Okay, we've had a lot of meetings, collaborative meetings within the federal government, collaborative meetings outside the federal government. This is a listing of some, and I would just encourage folks to go and look at these reports. In particular, we had a meeting at the NIH in June of this year with the Institute of Medicine, and we've already mentioned the Ebola meeting we had rapidly convened just 2 weeks ago. And I really encourage folks, congratulations to the IOM for getting these reports out so quickly. They came out just prior to the opening of this meeting, and I'd encourage you to take a look at those. A lot of the cross-cutting priorities, even when we had the Ebola meeting and we were talking specifically about this outbreak, the same themes that we have identified for needs for science preparedness continue to come up regardless of what we are talking about. Okay, so I did want to just take 5 minutes to talk about the ASPR grants that we have done for Hurricane Sandy. We received a supplement, and actually all of the agencies that have been represented here, CDC, NIH, and ASPR, were given a supplement for grants to support Sandy recovery research. We're also developing a data set for this research as well, and I'm going to actually introduce Dr. Marcy Wright to say just a few words about this grant program that kicked off in January of this year, and again, in collaboration with ASPR, CDC, and NIEHS. And I'd like her to just spend a minute showing you some of the outcomes from that research, because I think it's a great example of what we're trying to do with science preparedness across the board.
Thank you so much, Diane. I'm Marcy Wright, Program Official for ASPR Grants to support scientific research related to Hurricane Sandy, and I also don't want to stand between anyone and lunch. Very quickly, ASPR was pleased to be able to stand up a funding program to pilot rapid research program and infrastructure in response to disasters, specifically Hurricane Sandy, and this was supported by the Disaster Relief Appropriations Act, which funded several agencies, including CDC and NIH, to support Sandy research and training efforts. ASPR has issued two funding opportunities since January 2013. The program is supported by $11.9 million from Congress, and we have made awards of upwards of $5.7 million to date, funding resilience research and individual and community resilience, the health system response and healthcare access, mental health outcomes, social media, and worker safety. We're especially pleased that following our first funding opportunity, we were able to get our ASPR, CDC, and NIH grantees together at the beginning of their projects, which is the first time this has been done, to really explore opportunities for collaboration. And I'm pleased to talk after this session in depth about the particular types of cross-cutting projects that we collectively have been able to fund and support. Several of the grantees are well on their way. We're about 10 months out from the first round of the ASPR grants, looking at health system response and community resilience. Research outcomes include toolkits, models, training curricula, and I have a graphic, for example, from the University of Pittsburgh in partnership with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, primary care access and policy team, looking at ways to reduce and mitigate the disruption to primary care healthcare access in the Rockaway, Queens, a vulnerable population. One of the stipulations of the Disaster Relief Appropriations Act was that the research had to be conducted in one or more of the 13 impacted states from Sandy, and also have real-time recovery and benefit to those impacted communities. And therefore, ASPR, CDC, and NIH have been especially cognizant of the need to conduct outreach and encourage our grantees to conduct outreach. I'm pleased to say that we will be holding a large public meeting with the community-based organization and other thought leaders in the summer of this year. We will be having a special Sandy session in April of this year, as well as publication in the Disaster Medicine and Public Health Research Journal. And so, I'm happy to talk at length about this fall week.
That's terrific. Thank you, Marcy. I just wanted people to know who Marcy is. You can ask questions of her. So, again, just to kind of round out what we've been saying through all these talks you've heard this morning, the continued needs for our research infrastructure and science preparedness. I think we've made a lot of inroads in these areas, but we still have more to do, and some of those are here listed. I think our grant program has gone a long way. Doing these grants collaboratively across HHS has been terrific, and it's another way that we're pooling data and bringing the really building a community of practice is, I think, what we want to do. So just as important as building the infrastructure on the federal government side, we need to build a community of practice so people understand that they belong to this community of research, disaster research, on the outside. And I think this has already been said by others, so I will, and I think Dr. Lurie has already talked about some of the clinical network examples. This is the science preparedness team in ASPR. Thanks to all of those folks, and please visit us on the website. And with that, I will finish and take questions. The whole group can take questions. Thank you. Does anybody have questions? The whole panel is still here. Dr. Lurie is still here. Her phone's been ringing, but she is still available. Yes, there's a question back. Please stand up and so we can hear.
Question, and I might answer it in two ways. One is, during Sandy, when we met in New York to identify what a research agenda was, and Red Cross representatives were there, we also invited NGOs and local philanthropy to come so that they could also get invested in what this agenda was and think about the kinds of things that they might fund. I think it would be terrific both for, certainly to think about this for the future in our kind of incident command, you know, framework, but also to let the research community understand, number one, you have data that you'd be interested in collaborating to analyze so that they know, and certainly can let our grantees and others know that. You know, the other thing that I would just offer for this particular situation and for thinking about going forward is that right now we are finalizing, I hope, putting together sort of a research data set that links data from CMS and FEMA and HUD and Census and others, both individual level de-identified data and geographically linked data through a research enclave for people to use, again, to start to create this community practice. And we would welcome discussions with you about how that all might link in. And then I will let some of my colleagues answer the question, and I'll let them answer the questions about Minecraft, other than to say that I think that kids are really important assets in disasters. And number one, there are all kinds of ways to teach them to think about disaster preparedness and their role. And secondly, they're a whole lot more tech savvy than many of us, and they often are the only connects and English-speaking connects to their families, so kids have to be involved in all this stuff. In terms of the bureaucratic stuff, I think they are in a range of different areas, and I'd be happy to talk a little bit more offline about those. Some have to do with the way federal budgets are put together. Some have to do with the processes for how you can spend money. Some have to do with the federal acquisition rules. Some have to do with rules for administrative supplements. They're just all over the map, and if anybody wants a deep dive, Aubrey is expert in this, since he's been sort of leading a rapid funding work group. I don't know if you want to say more about that.
And address my
about that now.
So let me, can you hear me? So the Minecraft issue is actually me learning from my son, and it really goes to a fact that the community that plays Minecraft is building Minecraft at the same time that they're playing. And in a sense, that was my thinking, is if we're starting to build something here for the community that's ultimately going to be using it, it'll never succeed unless they're part of the building of that, of this game, of this resource. And I really wanted to think back of how do we get creative instead of the typical federal stuff as we try to create something and hand it out. But this side, we really need the community to help us develop. You asked a great question a minute ago, how do we help? You know, what are we doing here at Red Cross? You know, if we understand what you're doing at Red Cross, we can actually build something together. What is it you're collecting at Red Cross? Is it a public health practice platform, or is it research that'll help us answer a question? Understand that, and then to connect with you, and let's build that platform in a more communal way than what we've been doing. So it was really my attempt to try to reach out about, this is an engagement process. This is not a federal entity, at least from our perspective, what we're trying to build in the disaster research project is something that we're trying to build communally, both with our academic partners, but also our communities and NGOs that work with them.
Thanks. I see two more questions out there, and then we should probably stop. But first, sort of, what is research or what is science? So when we started this, and we had this discussion in the Gulf Coast, it was a very interesting discussion because and some of the work we had done, especially around H1N1, we went out to NIH and we said, well, could we fund this research network to collect all this data about what's happening to people clinically? They said, we don't do surveillance, we do research. When we had a meeting in the Gulf Coast around Deepwater, we heard, we do epidemiology, we don't do research. Is epidemiology science? And so we ended up sort of trying to find science as a neutral term that encompass many, many areas of rigorous inquiry. So I'll leave it at that. Go ahead.
don't get in their way, and so that they appreciate what we're doing and open their arms.
Good.
Actually, a report, I think, from 2011 that the National Biodefense Science Board, that's sponsored by ASPR, came out with one of their recommendations was is that to consider modifying the incident management structure so that there was specifically a science component to it. And personally, I think that's probably would be one of the most effective ways to do it, I mean, to ensure that you have a structural, essentially a structural intervention that calls out the need. And whether it's a, you know, science for environmental health or science for, you know, many of the areas that participate in the response, it's not just, you know, for the public health community that needs to answer these types of questions. And so that, to me, is the probably one of the most critical things that we could try to do. Because otherwise, I think it is an issue of building those networks outside of the response. I mean, the last thing that somebody in the health department wants to hear while they're, you know, up to their eyeballs and, you know, calls and, you know, the need to, you know, be responsive to the community is, you know, to hear perhaps from an academic center that has some, you know, interesting questions that they'd like to pursue. So.
And I'd like to just get an answer to that, because I found myself thinking about that same question, how do we connect with fire and the police and the guys who are doing the response? And part of it was actually, I'd write on a note, which is the World Trade Center. And had we not looked at that World Trade Center and gotten health data with respect to those responders, about 30% or 18 to 30% of those responders will have pulmonary effects, longitudinal mental health issues, and be able to go back and say, look, we got some data here that helps us understand what these impacts are and how does it change our practice. Folks who were responders before, when we started the World Trade Center and I was down there, you know, we know what we're doing, we're the response community, we do this stuff all the time, we're trained. You show them now, after it, having gotten health data and information, you go, we need to change some things based on what we thought we knew as a response community in terms of understanding some of these exposures, some of these issues where we really had significant impacts. And they stopped pretty cold in their tracks. And go, I get it.
I'm looking, it looks like, is this room being used for another session now? Looks, I see a bunch of people gathering outside the door. Quickly, you had a response to this, and then the gentleman back there.
As a local health officer, what got you into my heart really fast was bringing me something I needed to know that I didn't know when I needed to know it. If you did it in advance by showing up at the table and helping, that was great. If you did it by taking a question from me and researching it and bringing back a real-time answer, that was great. But that put you on my team, and after that, you got everything you needed when it was in my power to do it.
Thank you. Well said.
Okay. All right.
Good. Gentlemen back there, did you have something else? You're good. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Great.